step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
In This League College Fantasy Football Podcast with host Scott Bogman,
the Gridiron Scholar,
John Long, Eric Froten from NBC Sports Urge, and Nick Allen, owner of
CFB Winning Edge.
College Fantasy Starting Podcast. Go.
Welcome back, everybody. The College Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm joined here by my friends, John Lobb at Gridiron Scholar 91, the Gridiron Scholar, and CF Froten at CF Froten, Eric Froten from NBC Sports Edge. Depressing week for me, guys. I'll just get rid of my, my look back. Texas blew it up 28-7. Just horrific. I know I'm going to have to beat myself there, but it's worth it because it was just frustrating. Caleb Williams has to be the man. I don't know what they're waiting on right now. Lincoln Riley saying that we're going to look through all this bullshit.
It's a smoke screen. Caleb Williams is starting.
Please. Caleb Williams has got to be your guy. The players reacted to him. He came back and won that game. And he had the only big play of the game for them before the huge comeback as well. So don't know how it could be. I was in a cloud of depression after that, so everything else is kind of hazy to me. But yeah, I mean, one of the harder losses to take just in sports in my lifetime. It was the last time I came close to crying at sports was when the Rockets lost the 2017 Western Conference Finals to the Warriors. And this was pretty close too, because it seemed like we had it in the bag, but not so fast. And OU comes back. So anyway, John, please talk about what else happened in week six, because we have to get that out of my head here.
Well, I'm glad you're here, Scott. I know the pain. There's one game that'll hurt me for my lifetime, and it's the 1979 World Series. I was 13 years old. You are at the peak of your fandom. And I had watched the Orioles. This is newspaper days, people. I looked at the box score every day. The O's were incredible. They were one of the great regular season teams. They were up 3-1 with two games at home, 6-7 against the goddamn Pirates, 1969. I was never happier in my life. I was going to see the O's win the damn World Series. And we choked. We lost three straight. And I'm telling you, Scott, to this day, I see Willie Stargell, that old man. And he was like 38, but back in the 1979, 38 is ancient. And he hits that home run to deep left in the old Memorial Stadium, and my heart fell out. Yeah. I remember that game. I'm 55. That game hurts more than anything in my entire life. So I know the pain, Scott. And then the other one would have to be the Broncos getting shellacked by the 49ers in the Super Bowl. But I know that pain very much.
Yeah. So that Orioles staff back then was phenomenal. Oh. Steve Stone,
and 1980 Scott McGregor, and yep. Jim Palmer was old. Mike
Jim Palmer,
Flanagan.
But you're still going. Yep, you still do it.
We Absolutely. Were good, but the Pirates got us. So that one hurts.
One of the
so
great
bad.
Staffs of all time, that 79. Absolutely.
So back on to college football, but I love all my sports. I'm shocked. I have to admit it. I love the American Athletic Conference. I've seen Josh Heupel his offense at UCF a ton of times. I did not expect it. I knew it might work eventually, maybe 2 years. The fact that he's got this Tennessee Volunteer offense humming is just really impressive. I'm blown away. I did not think that they had the talent in Tennessee to do this, because it was clearly being wasted the last 5 years. He brought in the quarterback. Now, why he ever started Joe Milton for one or two games and that whole debacle is mind-blowing. Yes. But let's put that aside. Finally, rational coaching has come to the forefront. Hendon Hooker's been playing excellent football. 13-1 touchdown to interception ratio. Over 1,000 yards passing. Impressively, we love our rushing numbers. 282 yards rushing and 3 touchdowns. Go pick him up on your waiver wire. He's out there. Tyon Evans, the JUCO recruited running back. I mean, they lost Ty Chandler and Eric Gray, right? And then they bring in a JUCO transfer. And Tyon Evans has 486 yards and 6 touchdowns. And he's playing very good football. Then, Valuse Jones Jr., the wide receiver. The one thing we can say about Heupel, he's going to highlight a receiver. All the years he was with UCF, they had an alpha receiver. They get peppered with targets. We now know it's pretty much Jones, 22 receptions, 342 yards, and 3 touchdowns. He's fantasy worthy. And then I said, They're 4-2. This is an impressive football team. They lost to Pittsburgh, which, to tell you the truth now, doesn't look so bad, because Milton played in that game. Pittsburgh's much better than we all thought, and they lost 41. They scored 34 points in that game. The one team they really didn't show up against, Florida, they got pounded 38-14. But here we go. I'm so excited for this month of football. We're going to see what Tennessee and Heupel is made out of. Ole Miss, Alabama, Kentucky, and Georgia. Does anyone have a more difficult 4-game stretch over the next month than the Volunteers? But I'm telling you, I can't wait to see it, because I think Tennessee is at least going to be competitive. I would not have thought that earlier in the year. If you asked me in August, I would have thought Tennessee is probably 2-4 right now, and they would lose all 4 of those games. So I'm very impressed by Tennessee, watching them, having like Josh Heupel. Hey, I remember when he won the national championship back with Oklahoma. I mean, I've been a big Heupel guy. I knew he wasn't a pro, but it was impressive. I think it was the first year Stoops was at Oklahoma, and he brought in that new high-flying offense. They had some down years after Switzer. Stoops comes in, and Heupel takes over the quarterback. And I believe, you know, he just took off at Oklahoma. Watch him for a long
time. Who did they beat that year?
Was that
Florida State?
Maybe they did beat Florida State.
I want to say that. Was that the Peter Warwick year? Was that the same year?
I think it might have been. Now that you mention it, it might have been Florida State.
I don't remember. So, I mean, I'm not.
Yeah. I mean, I remember watching that at a bar with my friend. Because my friend was a big-time he is still a big-time Oklahoma fan. But that was a good game. But Heupel's offense is working, and I got to admit, I'm shocked by it. Now, there's so many good games. No one's talking about this Notre Dame-Virginia Tech, and it's not
that it was 0-1, and it was Florida State. It was 2001, and it was Florida State.
All right. What did they win? What's the score of that one? Do you have that score?
It just pops up. Like, it's the first tag on his wiki page. So.
All right. No one's talking about Notre Dame, Virginia Tech. What's interesting? What is Brian Kelly doing? Time to play Buckner, the freshman quarterback. Forget about it. Jack Cohn, who cares? You're 5-1. You've got a nice offense here. I don't know if you're going to run the table if you're Notre Dame. I don't think they're going to be able to do that. But you have a freshman quarterback, a highly touted freshman, who could lead your team 2 years down the road from here. Forget Jack Cohn. We saw what Buckner's upside is. He had 113 yards passing. Hey, he threw 2 interceptions. He's a freshman. I'm okay with that. He ran for 67 yards and a touchdown. This Notre Dame, we knew Notre Dame might be in a little bit of trouble because they had so many offensive linemen leave the program. They actually are 5-1. They're okay. I don't know if they're a great team. I don't think they're a great team. But this is team building year. It's time to put Buckner in the lineup. Forget about Jack Cohn. I'm looking at 2022. I'm looking at 2023. I need to get reps for Buckner. I got to see what I've got. Kyren Williams has had a good year, not a great year. But they have some receivers with Austin and Davis. Hopefully Michael Meyer, that's a whole different story. I hope he comes back this week. Oh, my God, it's been such a pleasure to watch him. Notre Dame's got some talent here. I don't see why they don't play Tyler Buckner. If he's out there, you got to get him on your team. For Dynasty Debbie, it's a no-brainer. For your college fantasy football, you never know in the playoffs. He's an interesting player. I was impressed with him. So that's the other one. And then, everyone who's listening to me, I love to just sit down and look at stats. So it's 6 weeks into the season. The quarterback, unbelievable. Depending on your quarterback system, I usually go with the quarterback system that is 4 points for passing touchdowns. I know Eric doesn't like that, but that's how the majority play. So I go by the standings with 4 point touchdowns when I do rankings. The reason I say that, Adrian Martinez, if you are in a 4 point touchdown league, Adrian Martinez has the most points in college fantasy football. Absolutely shocked. I mean, after that first game loss, where I think most of us in the nation saw it against
Illinois. No, it
wasn't Buffalo. Who did he play the very first game of the year? Illinois. Yeah. I was ready to write him off. Martinez is not the problem. They have some challenges late in games. I think the coaching staff, they got to learn how to win, but I'm shocked by that, number one. And then, I mean, Kenny Pickett, number nine. Unbelievable how well Kenny Pickett. We were just talking about that program at Pittsburgh, how well their offensive play, and that is shocking to me. 19 touchdown passes now. Looking forward to see Kenny Pickett go into Virginia Tech. It's always tough in Blacksburg. 19-1 touchdown interception ratio. Can they slow down Kenny Pickett in this offense? And then Sam Hartman. We got this young man, 14-3 touchdown interception ratio. They're still undefeated. And Hartman's the number 11 quarterback in college fantasy football. And on your bingo card, did you have Jerry Bohannon of Baylor as the 12th most productive college fantasy quarterback? Stat that blows me away. 11-0 touchdown interception and 6 rushing touchdowns. What an unbelievable season in college fantasy football. Lots of chaos, lots of fun. I just have loved this season. It's amazing that where we are and where we thought we would be in the middle of August, early September.
I mean, the thing that we did have with the quarterbacks, and Eric, I'm sure you'll agree, is just a lot of turnover. That was kind of one of the bigger things here was, you know, we had some major guys leaving some new guys coming in to start. So
I think that's going to be the norm, Scott, with all these transfer, with the portal, with all the. I think this is going to be much more normal than we have been accustomed to over the last decade in college fantasy football.
You're definitely right, but it's also, you know, Fields and all those high.
Oh, yeah, we have guys leaving.
Mac Jones, you know, Trey Lance wasn't for CFF for Trevor. Us. But, yeah, I mean, lots of those guys. Yeah, Trevor, of course. But, Eric, your week 6 experience had to be better than mine.
Well, everybody's is better than yours, Scott.
That's true.
So that is a low bar to clear. But, yeah, I actually had a great week 6 in terms of the overall experience. I got to go to on Friday night, the Cincinnati Temple tailgate. I hung out with the PFF guys. Yeah, awesome. I hung out with all the PFF guys, the Pro Football Focus dudes.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a good time. Pretty good crew. Pretty nice set of guys. And
did you go in?
I did not go in because they wanted to go to a bar after. And Austin Gale was nice enough. As soon as I walked up, to invite me to shotgun a beer with him, which I did. So, you know, that's always a good way to ingratiate yourself to me and then vice versa. So I appreciated that. Thank you again, Austin, Mr. Gale, although he's known, I know he's not listening, but, you know, the sentiment is still there. Anyways, but besides that, yes, Saturday, I really, a game that I had circled last week that I was really interested in seeing was Wake Forest and Syracuse, and it lived up to the hype. My gosh, overtime, drama up and down the board. Garrett Schrader, who I believe we talked about last week, or possibly the one before, he is so big. He is a devastating runner. Like he's 6'4", 221, I think he's listed at, you know, in this. I think he's bigger. I think he's got to be 230, 235. Because every time he makes contact with somebody trying to tackle him, he's going forward and he's blowing through those tacklers. It's really a sight to behold. And obviously their running back, Sean Tucker, has been phenomenal all season. He's the only guy who touches the ball in that backfield, a true bell cow. And he was, you know, right in the around the RB50 mark, I want to say, in the preseason rankings. And my gosh, did we undersell him? Because
nobody was trusting Syracuse.
You know? Which we didn't think that – we just assumed Syracuse, Dino Babers, is going to go right and try to, you know, quick – you know, get quick snaps off and throw the ball. Well, he went right back to the Dungy model and, you know, put Tommy DeVito, the good fella, out to pasture, deservedly so. And it's just really transformed that offense. And they're so tough to beat in the carry bill. You know, they really are. There's something about that place that it's tough to travel to, especially for those Southern ACC schools that have to go all the way up to upstate New York. Like that's quite a trek in terms of, you know, going from, you know, Wake Forest all the way up there. So
how about Miami traveling up to upstate New York?
Miami going from top to bottom. Yeah, bottom to top, excuse me. Absolutely. Like, that's a trip. You know, people don't realize it. You're going up the entire Eastern Seaboard, and then going in there into Syracuse, and it's a tough play to play. So Wake Forest, you know, undefeated, walks in, and they barely survive. Did it in dramatic fashion. A.T. Perry, three catches, three long touchdown receptions. Including a spectacular grab in overtime, walk-off, where he was looking over his left shoulder on the left-hand sideline at the back end of the end zone and had to actually twist all the way around and catch it near the sideline, keep his feet in bounds, and bring it in. You know, it was really just a great play. It wasn't bad coverage. I mean, he was well covered. It was just a great throw by Sam the Hitman Hartman. And a great catch by A.T. Perry. So that was, you know, in terms of one of the games I enjoyed watching this weekend, that was a great one. I was lucky to have that game assigned to me by NBC Sports. So thank you, Thor. Appreciate it. Texas A&M over Bama, obviously. I mean, we got to cover that here.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, Zach Calzada, a true coming-of-age performance.
Wow.
Terrible up until this point. I mean, just awful. And he came out and he's slinging it.
Looked like, I mean, Johnny Manziel out there.
I could not believe how good he was. And he was. I mean, let it not be said that it was a true great performance on his part. I love Anaya Smith. I've gotten in a couple of leagues and he's been unplayable to this point. So it's really nice to see him go out and break a couple of nice big plays and really kind of get back on it and see that Texas A&M offense really find itself, because they had so much problem up to this point. And at the same time, their defense did a nice job of pressuring Bryce Young, moving him off his spot. And gosh, the coverage downfield was great too. You know, obviously they gave up 31 points and you're going to have Alabama score on you, but you know, I can't say enough good things about that A&M offense. And Devin Achane got himself some work in there. He had a great run. He showed his explosive. He's literally an Olympic sprinter. You know, I want to say his 100 meters is in the 10.5 range, which is just otherworldly. So, you know, big props to A&M. No offense, Scott. Mr. Conroe native over there. Obviously, John mentioned Jerry Bohan, and they absolutely handled West Virginia, who had done a pretty good job in terms of pass defense. Not against them. Tyquan Thornton just continues to be a revelation.
Yeah, what happened to him last year, huh?
Well, you know what it was? It was year one of Aranda, and he's taken over for Rule, And he's, you know, a defensive-minded coach, figuring it all out. I believe he brought Fedora in as his OC, and he just failed. You know, the Fedora system just didn't work out. Got rid of him, brought in BYU's offensive coordinator from last year, and he's completely transformed it. You know, you see Thornton, 8 for 187, 2 touchdowns, absolutely incredible. They go and convert Abram Smith from a linebacker to be the bell cow. He gets 11 carries, 87 yards in that game. But like you said, I mean, it's been Bohan. I mean, it's been his show. He's been incredible. He threw 336 yards and 4 touchdowns in that game. He's usually pretty awesome on the ground, too. You can usually bank on him there. And it's just a tough case where even when you pressure him, he's able to roll out by time and either throw or just kill you with his legs. So the difference has been the BYU offensive coordinator coming in and taking over for Larry Fedora, and just year two of Aranda, where especially when you bring in a new coach and they just didn't have time to gel. They didn't have the offseason program. This kind of everybody was just thrown into it. And those teams with the new head coaches and just trying to implement new systems struggled. Well, they didn't have that problem this year, and they've looked absolutely incredible. And you just can't say enough about Baylor. Well done. And finally, obviously, Ole Miss and Arkansas. What a game. Again.
Yeah. That was as good as the Texas-Oklahoma State game. It was awesome.
Absolutely right there with it. Can't complain. Right down to the very end. KJ Jefferson, you know, it's like a lot of the criticism of him in the preseason was they're looking at Arkansas' schedule. I believe they had the second toughest preseason schedule.
Yeah, yeah.
In the country. You know, so people are like, oh, they're in the SEC West. You know, they draw Georgia, obviously, out of the East. That's a nightmare matchup, which, I mean, God, Georgia, what are you going to – who can – nobody can move the ball in Georgia. That's not
an indictment.
Yeah, it's not an indictment on Arkansas. I mean, nobody's doing it, and nobody's gonna do it. So, you know, you got to throw that game out, and you just look at what they've done against everybody else, and they've been so tough. And props to KJ Jefferson, because Kendall Briles, obviously offensive coordinator at Arkansas, they're using a similar philosophy as what they did last year with Felipe Franks, where Felipe Franks wasn't great, and that's being mild when it comes to a short to intermediate passing, but when they get the ball downfield and they get those one-on-one matchups, they did and continue to exploit those downfield matchups extremely well, especially with Burks. It just hasn't been, Trey Knox hasn't been as effective, and they threw it a couple times. I forget who 84's name. I just remember throwing to 84, and he hit it. I mean, my God, it landed right in his breadbasket for a touchdown. He dropped it, and I'm just like, all right, you just got to throw the ball to Traylon Burks and his size 11 hands. And let him handle it from there. And they did. And God, Burks banged up early in the season. Do you play him? Do you not? Yeah, you're playing him now. And they go tie it 52-51. Do you go for the extra point? Do you go for two on the road? Sam Pittman, I respect the call. Goes for two. It's just, you know, gut flush. Nice job by Ole Miss hunkering down. And covering those.
It was crazy how many people didn't like that call. I was surprised by that.
Yeah, I'm okay. Well, of course, everything's hindsight, you know.
Of course.
But you know, on the road, I like the gambler's mentality. I kind of like it.
I agreed with it.
Yeah, me too.
I'm fine with that. You know, and it's my God, how exciting is it? Like, all right, here it is. No time left on the clock. You got
this
one
is
play,
the game.
Win or you don't. And from the 3 yard line. So go for it. You know, I respect it. Otherwise, you're taking some chances in overtime, and it just didn't work out for him. But, I mean, you can't say enough about what a thrilling game it was and just a pleasure to watch. So, overall, a great weekend of football.
Yeah, it was great. Let's go to the high over-under games of this week. And, John, we start out with Ole Miss at Tennessee and the highest over of the year so far, and this is lower than what it opened at. I guess a couple weeks ago it opened at 85.
Oh my
now
god!
Down to 81.
Woo.
So this is going to be a very, very high impact Ole Miss Tennessee game as far as CFF and points go. So, who are you snapping up in this game, Johnny?
The number one player I think you should snap up is running back Snoop Connor. He's out there. I think he's still available in over 80% of the leagues. if you've been watching Mississippi like I have, Connor gets the goal line touches. When Mississippi gets into the five-yard line, basically, even when they had Ely in the lineup, Connor was the guy. And I think he scored three touchdowns against Arkansas, didn't he? He was really good against Arkansas in that game. It looks like Ely might not play again. So maybe they'll give Connor more. I mean, let's see. I'm opening up the line. Three touchdowns. He did have three. He had 112 yards on 12 carries against Arkansas. He's not a big-time receiver. He's only got five receptions all season long. This is a power back. But in this high-scoring offense, if he's going to get the majority of the workload and the snaps, you've got to go get Snoop Connor. Scott just said it. The highest over under, 80 points. I'm trying to debate if it's worth betting the over on. 80 is so much. That's just unbelievable, right?
It's hard to put money on that. Yeah.
That's 12 touchdowns, your bank, 11 to 12 touchdowns.
But when they go over 100 points, you're like, why didn't I bet the over on that? You know.
It's so hard. It doesn't feel like a trap after last week, Arkansas, Ole Miss.
Yeah, it just takes one bad quarter to screw that whole game for you. That's why I don't like betting those high overs.
I don't either, but I haven't made up a decision yet this early in the week. But obviously, Dontario Drummond, Braylon Sanders, Matt Corral, all must starts. I think Connor is the sneaky player to pick up here, especially with this week we have 27 teams on bye. Last week was 28, this week's 27. But we have bigger teams on bye this week. So if you do need a player, I like Snoop Connor in this game a whole lot. Talked about Tennessee. Volunteers are all over the place. They're on the waiver wire. You can get a bunch of them here. I don't think there's a volunteer over 50%. Now, Hooker might be after waiver wire tonight, the waivers run.
Yeah.
So he might get up to 50 overnight. But you need to get Tyon Evans. I still can't believe he's not on more teams at this time. And then Velus Jones. Go get him.
Velus.
It's Velus Jones. Go get him, everyone. Look, you can get these players 80 points. That's what we love in college fantasy football. Mississippi hasn't stopped very many people on defense. I don't expect them to stop Heupel's offense here. I mean, 80's a lot. I'm going to think about it all week. But that's what we love for college fantasy football. Go get those balls. Go get those Rebels. Put them on your team.
And I know we're about to enter the Church of Gunnar Holmberg here with Eric Froton. And it's Duke at Virginia. Virginia is an 11.5-point favorite. And we dropped 12 points in the over from the first game, from 81 down to 69. Still very high over here, Eric. Who are we adding in this game?
Well, yeah, I mean, gosh, if you're expecting multiple 81-point over-unders in 1 week, my gosh, you're going to be sorely disappointed. But
it's college basketball or college football?
But, you know, you see Duke, once again, pretty good performance out of them from an offensive perspective against Georgia Tech. You know, it's close game, 31-27. Mateo Durant continues. I mean, the guy put up another 43 carries last week. I mean, there are bell cows and there are Mateo Durant. You know,
right.
It's really a sight to behold. Jake Bobo continues to get pounded with targets. Jalen Calhoun is the deep threat. You know, Holmberg had 30 yards on the ground, but another 292 and two touchdowns. Whereas Virginia, I mean, gosh, they are involved in a shootout every single week. They are as true as it gets. You know what you're getting out of Virginia. And frankly, they're averaging over 500 total yards per game. So 526 to be exact, with 413 of that coming through the air, because we all know they don't want to run the ball, even though Wayne Talapapa's looked pretty good. Came back from injury, and he's clearly the preferred back there. But big deal here is Dontavian Wicks out for the season. Got hurt early on in the game. And a guy who I would recommended strongly in my DFS plays, he's gone, is Henry, who is the other opposite wide receiver. I'm pretty sure he's gone. I could be wrong, but I believe that's the case. Scotty, you can go and pull that up while I'm monologue.
Kemp there? Kemp's one of their guys there too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Kemp is an every week starter because he's the slot receiver and he just gets pounded with at least 10 targets a game. He's getting 10 targets. It's going to happen. He's so shifty, great in the open field, has a really good feel for space when it comes to the zone, too. He even caught a touchdown last game. I have him in multiple leagues, and I start him every week in the PPR formats because you literally cannot afford to sit him. He is 18 points. He's 9 catches and 80 yards at least every week, and he usually gets a carry or two to put up another 10 to 20. So just the way they use him, he's out there every single snap, absolutely indispensable part of their offense. You have to play him. But with Wicks out, and it's going to be at least for a couple of weeks, I think possibly longer, Rashawn Henry stepped up in a big way. And, you know, he's been the starting outside wide receiver. He's been getting at least 50 snaps a game for Virginia in terms of, you know, during the course of the season. And they leaned on him heavily against Louisville last game, and he certainly paid off. In fact, in DFS, he was only $3,300. And as I kind of mentioned, I loved that price considering, you know, we were at least guaranteed of getting 30 points out of each team, and they did. It was 34 to 30, and Henry exploded, you know, 9 catches, 179 yards. Just a spectacular performance on his part. And with Wicks, I assume he will be out for the near future. He's a guy, Henry, that you can pick up off the wire. Gosh, I know that he was out there before last week and even the 50 teamer he was out there. So I'm positive that he's owned in many, many leagues. I'm not sure exactly what his ownership percentage is, but that's definitely somebody you need to get and need to get immediately because it's.
You're talking about forward. Henry?
Kemp?
Henry. Kemp is 30% rostered. Henry is 4% rostered.
4% owned. 4%. And then obviously Keaton Thompson, who, I mean, Fantrax, Johnny, can you talk to Fantrax for me, bud? you got a line to them. Can you ask them what they're doing with Keaton Thompson still being a quarterback? I mean, if you look at the snap count, he literally never lines up there.
No, he doesn't.
Up in the backfield.
Out of Virginia. He What's going on? He's quarterback.
Give me a break. You know, he's not listed on the – he's listed as a football player on the depth chart. He's not a quarterback. Yeah, he gets zero snaps at quarterback. What is going on, Fantrax? Let's go. LF go, you know, as to shorten it up. So
I will send an email. I will. I promise.
Thank you. I guarantee you. I actually had Katz giving me a hard time about that on the the influencer himself, Andrew Katz, was – kind of barking about that in one of the things. I'm like, you're absolutely correct. So, and then while we're at it, Jordan Myers, Rice. How has that guy got tight end eligibility? He gets like one snap a game there. He's a running back. So while I'm airing my grievances, okay, I might as well get, you know.
Hey, I got him on a team. Leave me alone.
Okay, oh, yeah. You're not sending that email.
Yeah,
man.
John's like, we will not be sending that one, right.
Oh, that's
Fair enough. That's fine. Understandable, sir. I will move on now, but say – yeah, absolutely. In terms of Duke and Virginia, those are the players that we just kind of covered. It should be, obviously, I mean, at 69 points, neither of them went to that last game. It was 67 with Virginia and Louisville, and it was just under that, I want to say, like high 50s, whatever it was, against, I think it was 59 with Georgia Tech. But, I mean, Virginia doesn't play defense. They just don't. They're like North Carolina, just don't play defense. So
right,
you can rest assured playing those teams, and some of those guys are going to be available on your wires too. So definitely, guys, you'll want to be able to pick up. Especially, I would say the number one pickup on that game is again Rashawn Henry.
Non-Western Kentucky, a 12.5-point favorite on the road against Old Dominion. 67.5 is the over in this one. What are we thinking for that?
First, what are you people doing out there? Why is Mitchell Tinsley available in 84% of leagues?
Oh my God.
What is wrong with all of you? This is the most exciting passing game in the nation. They are not running the football. The Hilltoppers are not running the football. There's not.
This
even
is what
a
they did
back.
At Houston Baptist. They just pass.
Pass. Tinsley, 26 receptions, 448 yards, 3 touchdowns. But those numbers have inched upward in the last month. Fantasy points per game, 20, 11, 19, 21. You cannot tell me all our listeners have four or five better wide receivers than Mitchell Tinsley in the most explosive passing game. They, what did they have, 500 yards again last week against UTSA? Yeah. I mean, come on. We didn't mention how good was that game.
Bailey Zappe is Western
Kentucky, just from a fantasy perspective. So absolutely. What are you doing, everyone? Look, it, we know Stearns is on teams. Bailey Zappe's on teams. But we are literally staring at a wide receiver. All he has to do is get in the end zone a couple times. And one of these, you know, 18-point days is a 30-point afternoon. And we know Zappe's throwing three or four touchdowns minimum every week. You've got to go out and get Tinsley. Now, you go on Old Dominion. What are they, 11.5-point underdogs? Is that what they are? No, 12.5-point underdogs. Not in love with Old Dominion. But DJ Mack, even though he's wildly inconsistent, game script in this game tells us that he might actually be doing something in this game. If you are desperate for a quarterback, DJ Mack could be a player that you're looking at. I mean, he's had games of 36 points and 33 points, once against Hampton, once against Buffalo. The maddening part is he had minus one against Wake. He was terrible against Wake. And then Marshall had 8.8. So DJ Mack can be frustrating, but if you need someone desperately, I don't think it's the worst play ever with the game script and everyone that the Hilltoppers play. You've got to go into that game and thinking you've got to put up a minimum of five touchdowns to even be competitive. So those are the two players I like best in this game on your waiver wire.
All right, going over to the next game, Eric, Texas Tech on the road against Kansas. They are 16.5-point favorite. 66.5 is the total on that one. Who are we adding for this game, if anyone?
Well, geez, Texas Tech, you know, I mean, this team, they get lit up every week. But you, on the other hand, have Kansas, who's averaging 17.2 points per game. It's the movable force versus, the resistible force versus the movable object. If we were going in, you know, whatever physics that we were kind of going through here.
Reverse cliches.
Absolutely. It's just, what's going to give here? You know, is it Texas Tech's pathetic defense that gave up 52 points against DCU last week, where Max Duggan only threw 10 passes? And I mean, they gave up, obviously, 394 yards and five touchdowns on the ground.
Is there anyone that left that game healthy for TCU? They're all hurt.
Nobody. Yeah, there was one player. And that player was Kendre Miller, who came in for Zach Evans and proceeded to run for 185 and three. So he's the one. Gosh, if Zach Evans can't play, he's an auto add against Kansas because it's Kansas. For Texas Tech side, gosh, Henry Colomby in Matt Wells' offense, again, 344 yards passing, zero touchdowns and interception because Thompson, Sir Roderick, the Earl of Lubbock, as I like to call him, Sir Roderick, he 18 for 118, three touchdowns, also two catches, 79 yards. He's basically the whole show for Texas Tech. I mean, finally healthy. We've been waiting for him. He's been questionable, missed a few games. Finally healthy, looked back to himself. Well done by Mr. Thompson. And with Taj Brooks out, he really isn't getting challenged. Xavier White's a passing down back, but maybe not. I mean, gosh, obviously Sir Roderick took that out. Kalen Geiger, who's been sort of the point per reception guy, six catches, 99 yards the last game. It's been pretty consistent, whereas Ezukama, a guy who I have in a couple of leagues, just hasn't been able to pull his weight recently. He had concussion issues. It looks like just simply the ability of Geiger to get open in the middle of the field is what's kind of been prioritized in that offense, as opposed to Colomby really not having the juice to gas it up on the outside. So, you want to be aware of them. Obviously, given the fact that Texas Tech got so lit up last week, you want to keep an eye on Devin Neal, a very highly touted true freshman, without a doubt the best recruit they had coming out. this year for Kansas, for Lance Leopold, and a changeover year. But, man, against Iowa State last week, they were brutal. And they lost 59-7. Rowan Atkinson himself, Mr. Bean, 10 for 20, 120 yards. You know, the British mime, I suppose, is what he'd be kind of considered. One interception. Neal was still pretty good, 83 yards on 15 touches. So I would think that Devin Neal, if he's out there on the waiver wires, would be a nice streaming option this week. But I can't back anybody else, especially in that passing game, because there isn't enough consistency. So that's my take on Texas Tech Kansas.
This is the Kansas that I know. Right here. So this is the one we're used to, is this current Kansas. But Marshall is 11-point road favorite over North Texas, 65.5 is the over on that game, John. So who are we looking to snap up in this one?
We haven't talked a lot about him this year, but freshman running back Rasheen Ali on our show,
he's the greatest.
He's been 11 touchdowns, plus he had a kick return for a touchdown. I think it was 2 weeks ago on a Thursday or Friday night game. I remember he returned a kick for a touchdown, averaging 5.5 yards a carry. What a tremendous season. Obviously, in the group of five, I can't rank him amongst the absolute best, you know, freshman, because he's not facing the competition that you would like Trevion Henderson at Ohio State, anything like that. But he's having a terrific college fantasy football year. I am getting a little bit tired of Grant Wells. Throw some touchdown passes. Now, part of it is you have Ali, who's so good, he runs it in. But Grant Wells has only thrown 8 touchdowns. He has 243 attempts, and he has 9 interceptions. I keep thinking the touchdowns are going to come, but they're not. So I'm not sure if I'm ready. I guess desperation, but I'm not in. I don't think I go there. And then I said this earlier in the year, Corey Gamage has not scored a touchdown. I thought he might score one 3 weeks ago. He still hasn't scored.
When you learn how to say Gamage, he'll score a touchdown.
Gamage.
When I learn how to say it, he'll score a touchdown. Corey Gamage, 38 receptions, 515 yards, and 0 touchdowns. Hey, part of it's obviously Grant Wells isn't getting him the ball, but there are numbers there in PPR leagues if you're desperate. Interesting part about North Texas, I'm not going near the quarterbacks. No way. DeAndre Torrey is based.
Come on.
Austin on. He lit up Missouri last week.
It's Missouri.
Dude, I took Missouri in that game. Now, I took Missouri in that game. It was minus 19, and they let North Texas, whose defense was like 100, or offense is 119th in the country, going into that game, score a touchdown with 3 minutes left. I was pissed.
They also beat me, Bogman. I took the under in that game. And I was like, what did you say? North Texas was 19 points behind us, or 21 points?
It was 20 points because there it kept going to 20.
I thought I had it no problem. And like an hour later, I'm like, oh my God, I lost that bet. Never count your money before the game's over. Oh, I was so pissed at the end. But you got to start Torrey. He's a must start. Roderick Burns, we liked him earlier in the year. He was getting peppered with targets, but his production has come way down. I don't think there's anyone else on the mean green that I'm looking to start at this time.
All right, the last high over under game here that we have for Eric is TCU, who, like we said, everyone left hurt, versus Oklahoma. Oklahoma is a 13.5 point favorite. 65.5 is the over here. Is there anyone left on TCU to pick up, Eric?
Yeah, you'll definitely want to monitor the aforementioned Kendre Miller, obviously. I mean, he ran for a 185.3. Has to be monitored. Obviously, you have both Duggan and Zach Evans questionable, as well as Quentin Johnson, who I loved in the preseason. And he just simply, in that offense, you know, has not been prioritized. And frankly, he's been hurt a lot.
Yeah, he's been dragging around an injury the whole year.
Yep. It's he has not been the same guy. And that's just, hey, that's how it goes. That's why we play the game. So, you know, I'm skeptical in terms of targeting anyone from that passing attack. I've actually been fading I think two times this year, J.D. Spielman made my column, and I cashed on him twice in the player props because he just doesn't – I don't understand why DraftKings he's put him out, but please, bless you, put him out again at 48.5 yards, and I'm going to bet him again. So I don't have a lot of faith in that TCU offense in terms of predicting who it's going to be, you know, especially in the passing game. But on the other side, Oklahoma, I know you want to talk about them, Scott. Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
I took him in the Industry Dynasty League. We didn't draft last year, so it was a full pool of the last two years. So you had a full boat. I had the number five pick, and I took Caleb Williams with the number five pick with an eye towards next year. But at the same time, he was so electric in the spring game. 11 for 11 passing. You saw the speed. And he's built like Jalen Hurts. He's a thick kid. He's not tall, but he's 6'1", and he's thick. He's about 215 pounds. My gosh, he can take the hits. And he is fast. And just brings that different dynamic that Oklahoma didn't have with Rattler. And the other intangibles, which I know John could certainly speak to, being an educator like he is, the intangibles of leadership.
Oh, my God.
You see the guys playing for him. Like, you just didn't see. Like, it didn't seem
they
like
they didn't
that
care
team
about Rattler.
Was
Rattler
on the same no page all year.
He has just, no friends on that team.
You just don't get
he's
that
a
feeling,
dick.
Huh?
I mean, he was a dick on QB1.
I know. You know what?
None
I rewatched
of his
QB1.
Like him,
he was
you know
a dick.
Yeah. So it's not surprising that they like the other guy. So I'm not shocked at all.
Especially after you see what he did in the spring. Yeah. Where, I mean, I'm talking, my eyes opened like, you know, the scene in Caddyshack where Rodney's driving the boat and there's that dude on the dinghy and he looks up and then he looks up again. And his eyes are literally like the size of dinner plates. That's what it was when I was watching Caleb Williams. And I'm like, oh my God, the kid's arm is there too. It isn't just his legs, which I knew he was going to have.
Well, Marvin Mims scored his first touchdown of the year. I mean,
that was
he
next
makes the whole offense better. Everyone but Eric Gray.
Dude, he resurrected Marvin Mims from the scrap heap. I mean, resurrected like you know, Methuselah. Here he comes, you know, or Lazarus, excuse me. Methuselah's the old guy. That's us. Lazarus rising from the dead, you know, Marvin Mims with that catch in the front pylon might have been the greatest front pylon cam I've ever watched, too. It's like he literally went right into the pylon. And it was just, my God, it looked like a different team as soon as he got in there. And we talked about Rattler before because he wasn't making those good throws out of structure. You know, when you move his feet, one, you know he's not running, okay? And if he does, he's just not getting too far. He isn't a runner, and he wasn't making the off-script throws. He wasn't making the on-script throws. So I couldn't be more impressed with what I saw from him. Like I said, I had Caleb Williams. I invested heavily in him, took him in the 5 pick in a double draft. I then took him again in my home league that I've been in for 20 years at pick number 17 in the second round in order to secure his services again, where, again, it was a double draft. It had the 20 class and it had the 21 class included. Got him in both of those, heavily invested in him. And I cannot possibly imagine they're going to start Spencer Rattler. Why would you do that? What's he going to do? Transfer? Okay, fine, dude, go. Yeah, we've got Caleb Williams for the next 3 years. Adios. Go the way of Tanner Mordecai. Find yourself a G5. Go to Western Kentucky and take over from Bailey Zappi and go and try to rebuild your value. I don't care where you go, but you cannot possibly start Spencer Rattler in this game. It would be a criminal decision on Lincoln Riley's part to do that, and you'd be absolutely hurting your team, and I got to think the team's going to be pissed if you did so. So, obviously, everywhere
that,
you're going to take
that's
it.
The key. He might lose that team if he puts Riley back on – or Rattler back on the field. He can't do it.
Can't.
He can't do it. The players will not play for you.
Absolutely. I completely agree. It's Caleb Williams' show. His era has begun. It will last for 3 years, and then he's gone. That's the lone solace that you have, Scott. Is he ain't sticking around past his expiration date. It's going to be him, and it's going to be Quinn Ewers, and they're gone in 2023 to that draft. So that's the one thing that you could possibly rest on, Scott. It won't be that long of Caleb Williams, but man,
look, with Sark coaching, I'll take my guys. So, you know, look, almost beat him. I mean, you can laugh all you want, Eric. We almost just won this game.
Until Caleb Williams came in. Well, you got two more years of him,
but no one expected it. So I'll take my guys. So I'm not going to abandon them because they choked one game. So, you know,
well, you don't have to abandon them, but, you know, reality doesn't care about your feelings, Scott.
Right. It doesn't. Yeah, I know. That's how I open the show. So they do not.
All right. I know you're mad. I mean,
they do not care about my feelings. But let's go to the fantastic.
All right. Ceasefire, Scott.
All right. Let's go to the.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to. Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry. We're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Fantastic Four. And John, what do you got?
Well, first, I had a simple rule before I came on tonight. Don't mention Texas. And you've not heard it out of my mouth all night. So I've learned.
We're not doing a great job of that.
I've been working with Scott for 5 years. Don't say a word. The other team, don't say nothing about the Steelers. And you'll be all right. So to the Fantastic Four. I don't get it. Casey Thompson is floating out there on currently right now. You're looking at 66% of teams. He has scored 155 fantasy points this year. The upside alone warrants him as a starter. 43 points against Oklahoma, 51 points against Texas Tech. He only had 15 against TCU and Rice. They blew him out. I don't even care about how much. And they lost the game at Arkansas. The bottom line is Casey Thompson against Oklahoma State. If you need a quarterback this week, my Mr. Fantastic is Casey Thompson. And this is a cheat code. You bet and you run against Missouri. Devin Achane is the guy you want this week. Missouri might give up 350 on the ground. I know Spiller's the number one guy. Spiller will get his 140. Not worried about that. Achane might get into this game and he might end up with 100 himself. I don't see why Texas A&M would even throw the ball other than to get some practice reps in. I mean, they can't stop anyone, Missouri, on the ground. They are 130th against the run. Achane is a sophomore. He should probably get on the field next year, get this young man some reps. He's dangerous. He's got speed. I do believe he returns kicks and punts, if my memory serves me well. So he gets touches on special teams. My thing this week is Devin Achane against Mizzou. And he's only on 23% of rosters right now. And one player that I'm baffled. I haven't talked about him. No one's talked about him. I mean, very rarely. I don't see him on any national shows or anything like this. But this young man, Elijah Higgins at Stanford, he's a fascinating player. Let's see. He's 6'3", 235 pounds. Go look at some of his numbers. He's an athletic freak. His numbers are equivalent to DK Metcalf, Julio Jones. He gets a lot of mentions as a total freak athlete. Now, he plays for Stanford. not your typical place to look for production at wide receiver. But if you had J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, what was it, 3 years ago now? He was a very good college fantasy football wide receiver.
Not so great in the NFL.
What?
Not so great in the
NFL. No, not in the NFL. I mean, but Stanford got him drafted because their system throws to the alpha male in the system. They just let their big receivers. Stanford has a lot of these big 6'2", 6'4", receivers. Hey, young man, just go get that ball. And they just sky up. But this Elijah Higgins is a fascinating player. He is my human torch this week. He plays Washington State at home. Washington State's not great. Their defense is middle of the pack. Stanford's going to be able to throw the ball. They're playing better football. Their quarterback, Tanner McKay, is that it? He's playing much better. I like him. And then Dante Cephas, the wide receiver. You've got to go pick him up for Kent State. He's, what did he have? 18 targets, ended up with 13 receptions the other day.
Exactly, and they're correct. They're out of that tough schedule from
the Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They're now in 100% MAC zone. And we love Dustin Crum in the MAC zone. Go get Dante Cephas. He's my invisible girl playing Western Michigan. He's available on 92% of Fantrax leagues right now. My two wide receivers, if you need them, Elijah Higgins and Dante Cephas. And don't forget about Mitchell Tinsley.
All right, Eric, what do we got for the Fantastic Four this week?
Well, we mentioned previously Gerald Bohannon for Baylor. What more can you say about this guy, what he's done? A pair of 40-plus point performances, two others that are at least 29 or more. He didn't have a great game against Oklahoma State, but I mean, that's four of his last five games. He has been a game breaker and somebody that obviously you have to consider getting in your lineup. He's only 20% owned. They're playing BYU. And while BYU has been pretty good this year, they also just got lit up by Hank Bachmeier. And I frankly would much trust Jerry Bohannon over Hank Bachmeier. And as we mentioned, you know, 27 teams on bye. These last 2 weeks have been absolute murder, and you have some very high-profile teams on.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. If you're looking for a second quarterback, he's available in 80% of leagues, and, hey, why not take a shot? My second – so that is my – Mr. Fantastic. My thing is Dylan McDuffie, 2% owned, and they're playing Ohio. So McDuffie plays for Buffalo, and he is – as you remember with the Bulls, it seems like they carried over – the philosophy that they had last year with Lance Leopold and previously where Kevin Marks and Jared Patterson, it was consistently a two-back system. They've kept that consistently, and we've seen McDuffie really have an impact behind Kevin Marks, really alongside him, sometimes even, you know, having as many carries and splitting. Last week against Kent State, 48-38 game, you know, an absolute shootout. He had 87 yards, a touchdown, plus three catches, 32 yards. That's 21 points in a reserve role. Whereas, you know, 2 weeks beforehand, Old Dominion, another 16 carries, 59 yards, and a touchdown. And the week before that, against an excellent Coastal Carolina team that they gave all they could handle, 28-25 loss, he had 15 for 92 and a touchdown. So on a per-carry basis, McDuffie's been excellent. Then you factor in their opponents this week, which is Ohio. Now, according to our friend, Nick, Ian, Allen, three first names. Never trust a man with three first names. I do not trust the Brooks Brothers bad boy himself, of course. That being said, Nick, who does a wonderful job in terms of his advanced data, his analytics, I love it. I read it every time he goes and puts it out every week. I try to make sure I look it up. Anytime looking up a team, I go through Nick's stuff. He's really great. And he ranks Ohio's rushing defense as the dead last worst rushing defense in the entire country.
Worse than Missouri.
Even worse. I know. It seems impossible. I ride with Nick. And if he says that Ohio is 130th, well, I'm going to go with Nick saying Ohio's 130th because I have watched a little bit of them. And this is just a terrible defense. I mean, you can't. They don't do anything particularly well. 113th in points per drive, 104th in explosiveness per play, success rate, 106th. I mean, they do okay against the pass. They're ranked 71st, which is pretty good for that. But, I mean, they just get grinded on the ground. And what does Buffalo want to do? That's what they want to do. They want to beat you up on the ground and then take deep shots down the sidelines to last week, my human torch, none other than Keon Williams, Neon Keon, who had another good game this week. I believe he had 90 yards and 7-8 catches or so. So, I mean, he continues to be the primary weapon on the outside. So, at only 2% owned in a short slate, Dylan McDuffie is going to be available in a lot of waiver wires, no matter what the depth is of your league, and playing against the dirt worst rush defense in the entire nation, Ohio. I'm going to go and recommend him and put him as my thing. Is he as good as Devin Achane and as sexy? No. But, hey, we're going deep league on that shot. Another guy, only 3% owned. We're going to stay in the MAC, John, because like you said, these MAC teams play, they take paycheck games in these early off-conference games. They'll play one cupcake, and then they take three paycheck games against Power 5 teams because that's how they feed their – that's how they make money. You know, they're not making it at home with 5,000 people, 10,000 people showing up. Exactly. That's how they survive, and they have to do that. So, Kanata Mumfield, Akron, 3% owned, has been as consistent as you could possibly ask for a receiver all season long. Last five games, he's had a touchdown in every single game. 25 passes caught on 34 targets, 331 yards, and six touchdowns over that five-week span. His passer rating when targeted is 136.5, according to PFF College. Obviously, Scott, take a drink, right? When I quote PFF, that's how it goes. And then in terms of where he's done his most, he's posted at least 16.9 points in each of the last four games. And in terms of where he's done his damage, from the 0 to 20-yard range, he's lit it up. 18 of 20 targets, 92.6 PFF receiving grade on those short to intermediate routes. He's basically uncoverable. He's a guy that at 3% ownership rate, with that sort of a track record, playing Miami, Ohio, you know, who is a team that isn't anybody I'm really too concerned about. It's a MAC team. You know, they're, again, you look at what they do well. What they do well on defense, 62nd rank in terms of suppressing the rush. What they don't do well, 90th rank pass defense. That's what they're going to do. That's what Akron does. Tom Arth, coming from UT Chattanooga 3 years ago, has really turned this team around. We all know how bad the Zips were for a decade, how bad they have been. Arth has done a really nice job. They actually upset Bowling Green 35-20 last week, and it's been because they've been throwing the ball effectively. 13th in the country with 69% completion rate for Akron. We personally guarantee you, over the past decade, Akron hasn't ranked in the top 15 in any offensive metric in any way, shape, or form, period. That is a drastic improvement. This is not your mama's Akron. It's a new team, new, young, offensive-minded coach in Arth. He's doing a great job. And against Miami, Ohio's soft pass defense, I see no reason why Kanata Mumford cannot continue to be a very productive receiver and get in the end zone again. Lastly, Old Dominion. We talked about him a little bit. Obviously with John, they're playing Western Kentucky. The over-under is 67.5. I mean, what more can you possibly ask for? Is Old Dominion a juggernaut? Of course not. However, they do have a player that I really did a deep dive in for my waiver wire column that's out. Feel free to go check it out on Twitter and on NBC Sports Edge. Tight end Zach Kuntz, owned in 15% of the leagues. Now, you might not be aware of what Zach Kuntz has done this season, but his usage is second only to Trey McBride for Colorado State. 48 targets, okay? Unbelievable. Zach Kuntz, if you told me before the season that Zach Kuntz is going to be the number two most targeted tight end in the country, you know, I would have lost that bet handily, quite obviously. And the offense isn't great. I mean, 34% success rate. That stinks. 53% completion percentage. Wonderful. 122nd in marginal explosiveness. I mean, we could go down the line. However, Zach Kuntz has a slightly better catch rate, 56.3%. It's not great in terms of the top tight ends. It's one of the lowest, but you peel back the layers a little bit. Zach Kuntz is number one in the country with 13 targets for tight ends of more than 20 yards. Of those 13 passes, the next closest was a guy that we'll hear about in a little bit, Derek Dees, who has 9. Third place is tied with 7 between Cole Turner and Xavier Gaines. It's almost double the third place in terms of hitting those deep shots downfield. It's not something you see a lot out of tight ends. So when you factor in, he's only caught 2 of those 13. He didn't drop any of them. It's just you're asking DJ Mack to throw the ball 20 yards downfield in the seam. Well, what are you asking for? I mean, that's how it goes. Right. That being said, within a normal tight end range, which you expect him to be, he's got 25 of his 35 targets at 20 yards or less, which is a 71.4% catch rate. That's excellent. Zach Kuntz is getting a heavy, heavy workload. And in this game against Western Kentucky, which we all know, what does the Western Kentucky do? They play fast. They're getting reps off. And they want to race you down the field, okay? That's fine. Because when you're talking about their pass defense, they're ranked 121st in the country. Lovely. Give me more of Western Kentucky's pass defense when you're talking about their number one target in Kuntz. And he's only 15% owned. As we mentioned, short slate. He's going to be available on most of those wires. I can find no fault in why you would want to go and pick up Zach Kuntz, at least for a spot start here. And given his track record, and why wouldn't you at least maybe keep him on your roster and see what happens? So as far as my invisible girl, Zach Kuntz, Old Dominion.
I do like the breakdowns of the lesser known players. You know what I mean? Because you're convincing people to pick up Mac players and Old Dominion players and stuff like that. So the breakdown is necessary. So great work by Eric. I'm not going to break down nearly as much as Eric did here. You know, I mean, secret.
Look at us, Scott. We're getting along again. That's all it took.
We were always getting along. You know? I'm always going to love you. You can talk smack to me. It's
fine.
You
know I love you, Bugsy.
So, you know, I don't, you know, I was at a 6. You don't want to see me go to a 10.
I do not. But no.
Hendon Hooker, we talked about, I think I got to the sheet first. I at least got to quarterback first. I know that. And Hendon Hooker, he might be over 50% rostered by the time this comes out, because like we said, waivers are going to run. He is 27% owned. He just had a huge week. And this is the highest over of the week. I don't think I need much more breakdown outside of that. Running back, we talked about how Texas Tech should dominate Kansas. They're 16.5-point road favorites in a game with a 66.5-point over here. I think he sees a ton of rushing attempts for Texas Tech this week, so I expect him to go off. Xavier Worthy, we're going to tie that right into everything that John just said about Casey Thompson, and I'm not giving up on my guys for Texas, and Worthy is 37% rostered, and he just went over 200 yards receiving, had a big fumble, but he is a true freshman. Open up that game with a 75-yard touchdown as well. And then, you know, you just heard Eric mention it. As far as tight ends go, Derek Dees, they're playing against who are they playing? San Jose State.
San Diego State.
San Diego State. That's right. And the last two,
you're coming to my kitchen now.
In the last 2 weeks. For 2 weeks for Derek Dees, he has scored a touchdown against New Mexico State, 7 catches, 130 yards, and that score 4 for 52 and a touchdown. So that that last game against New Mexico State on the 2nd kind of has opened him up as far as the San Jose State offense goes. So that is who I will take. Now it's time to go to the negative zone here, Johnny. So who are you putting into the negative zone for week number 7?
I don't have as much passion for this negative zone as I usually
do. I don't think I could take any more passion.
Sorry to all our listeners who are waiting for a lob rant. This is just a normal negative zone, at least for me. In week 3, I went off on Spencer Rattler and Oklahoma, and I was totally right. They all deserved to be benched until Caleb Williams came in. We saw nothing. I had 2 people send me DMs angry that I went off on Oklahoma and Spencer Rattler. You know what? I was right. this week.
Damn right, John.
Before anyone gets figures it out, I'm out on LSU's offense. They're in the negative zone. I've been watching them. It was all about Boutte is now gone. Forget about it. Forget about this offense right now. These are the last three games. They only scored 21 points against Kentucky, 19 points against Auburn. They only put up 19 on Auburn.
It was a field goal festival. There was kicking field goals left and right, Johnny. It was terrible.
Unbelievable. 28-25 against Mississippi. Look at Joe Brady, Joe Burrow. Jamar Chase is a decade ago. They are so bad right now. And I want Mac Johnson to be good. I got him on teams. I'm benching him this week. They play Florida, Ole Miss. Well, I guess they might score against Ole Miss, but then they play Alabama and Arkansas. They are in big time trouble. I don't like their running game. I don't understand. I've watched LSU football for 30 years. They can't get a running game? The Tigers can't find a running back? That's like crazy talk. Like, how can they not have a running game down in Baton Rouge? Max Johnson, there are so many quarterbacks on the waiver wire. We've been talking about quarterbacks all night. I think every quarterback that we've discussed is better for the rest of the year than Max Johnson. What is his upside now? He has minus 3 yards rushing for the year on 39 attempts. There is no rushing upside. You are only banking on him and Boutte hooking up for 2 touchdowns a game, and then he gets to throw to someone else. I know people are like, is it Jack Beck, Brian Thomas, Deion Smith? You know, play whack-a-mole. Who knows the hell is going to be their wide receiver now? I'd rather just go to the amusement park and try to hammer in holes than figure out which one of these mediocre LSU receivers that I'm going to put into my lineup. I could have Mitchell Tinsley or one of these guys. Forget about it. No running game, no quarterback. I'm out. LSU, you're in the negative zone.
You remember when John wasn't going to have as much passion this week?
Exactly. I'm saying the same thing, Scott.
Come on, man. Like, you know, we get this red face from John when he's doing it. It's the best. I don't even know why you and I bother doing the negative zone. He's so much better than we are. For real. Like, you know, Eric and I got a lot of stuff. You were killing the negative zone. But
well,
Eric,
you know, it might be my favorite segment in any show I do all week.
Is the negative zone? I mean, you get pumped for it, man. You do get pumped.
I love it.
And so, Eric, who's going in the negative zone for you this week?
Well, I am getting sick and tired of trying to predict which North Carolina team is going to show up from week to week. I don't know. I've given up. I don't know. You tell me. Okay, they get Florida State this week at home. Great. This is a kill spot. Oh, think again. Think again. No, they went out and laid an egg 35-25. It wasn't even that close. Give me a freaking break here. You go, okay, you dominate Duke 38-7. Congratulations. Week before that, Georgia Tech puts it on them 45-22. Are you kidding me? They beat UVA. All right, great. They can score 59 points against Virginia. Congratulations. They beat Georgia State. Week one of the season, everybody's in love with North Carolina. Oh, it's Mac Brown. He's been recruiting his balls off. We know. They got rocked by Virginia Tech. Which team is showing up every week? I don't know. And look at what they got coming up. All right. Miami, given they don't have De'Ara King, but Miami, are they been great? No, but geez, I mean, do you trust UNC? I don't trust them. Then you got Notre Dame at Notre Dame in South Bend. Great. Maybe. I mean, they should, but who knows? Then you got ACC leader Wake. Then you got to travel to Pitt. Then you got to go to NC State. That's their schedule. Like, there's no cream puffs left. You don't know week to week what you're getting out of these guys. If they can't handle Florida State, how are they going to hit Notre Dame, Wake, Pitt, NC State? Give me a break. I can't do it. I'm done with it. Josh Downs is the only guy that I can sit there and say Josh Downs is it, because he's the only guy they can trust in the whole wide receiver corps.
He is. He's the only guy.
That's it. That's the only guy I want any freaking part of, and anybody else should. So I've just had enough, you know, of North Carolina trying to predict them, trying to say that they're back. You know, they're not. They're 3-3. They're a trick-or-treat team. Good luck figuring out which team shows up on every weekly basis with that schedule coming up. My negative zone.
All right. So for me, how can I not put Texas in the negative zone? How can I not do it? All right. You're up 28-7. You piss away a gigantic lead. I don't care who came in. I don't care if it's Caleb Williams. I don't care if it's the Peyton Manning. I don't care if it's the ghost of Red Grange. Why are you pissing away a 3-touchdown lead after the first quarter? And why did Bijan Robinson not get the ball more in the second half?
That's perplexing.
I don't understand it. So look, it's a new coaching staff. They're getting used to all this. I didn't expect them to win this game, but then I did. When you get up 28-7, you expect to win that game. So wholly and completely disappointing. And the only person worse off than Texas was Spencer Rattler and his body language on the sideline when they benched him and all that stuff. You still got to be a good teammate, man, but he is a pissy crybaby, and I will be glad to see him playing in Memphis or something next year. So
get out of here. Give Caleb time. Zero shares of Rattler. Hit the road. Yeah,
they can all follow him to Northern Illinois or wherever he's going to go next year. Florida State, it doesn't matter. You know,
taking over Western Kentucky. That's what you're going to go and swing the ball around and look whatever. Like a dream. Yeah.
Yeah, they can watch him roll to the right for no reason and cut off half the field. So, that's great. So I am done with Spencer Rattler for sure, as Oklahoma should be. Bold predictions. Actually, no. John, you wanted to talk about your favorite Heisman candidates before we go into bold predictions. So what do you got on that?
I know that it's become a quarterback award. But right now, I don't think there's a quarterback that is worthy of this award. If I had a vote, there's no way I'm voting for a quarterback. There's not one that I would say leaps and bounds ahead of everyone else. I'm going to go 2 running backs at the top of my board right now and see if you think I'm crazy. I'm going 1, Kenneth Walker, and 2, Bijan Robinson. I think they're the 2 most impressive backs. Not Debbie, not Dynasty. I'm just talking college football Heisman Award. If Michigan State could ever run the table and win the Big Ten or at least get into the championship game, it's Kenneth Walker. And I like what they've done around Kenneth Walker, but it's him or Bijan. Now, Bijan had won last week. I would have had him 1, but I'm putting Walker at 1 for now because the Spartans are undefeated and he's their entire offense.
I mean, who's the argument here? Who would you go with, Eric, as far as the Heisman goes?
Well, it's all about value for me, you know, and it's not so much, obviously, you know, right now in terms of looking at the odds, Bryce Young's the favorite. Matt Corral's right behind him at 185 and 210. So there's
I'm
no
looking
value
at DK
there.
Right now. Corral and Bryce Young are both at plus 210.
Oh, God.
Both at plus. Okay, so they've even dropped. My apologies. I was just, you know, going through a list that I pulled up on the internet. That being said, based on what I'm seeing here, I like what John's saying with Kenneth Walker. But since he took Walker and Bijan, I like the running back idea. I will go down the board where I think I like the value. Desmond Ridder plus 1,500. Yeah. I would love to see just Cincinnati wins out, gets invited, you know, gets a spot in the top 4. If they go to the top 4, if they get a playoff berth, I got to think Ridder is going to be in the mix at the very least. The plus 1,500, okay, you know, I'll take that shot.
That's
plus
a great bet.
You know, why not? You know, we're trying to get a little bit of value here, try to have a little fun, you know. All right, let's go with that. And as well, I will stick with another, you know, sort of off-script quarterback. Kenny Pickett's plus 4,000. Okay.
Ooh.
Let's go through Pittsburgh's schedule right now. They're 4-1.
Yeah.
Okay. They're 4-1. They beat Tennessee, beat Georgia Tech. We got Virginia Tech this week, Clemson at home. I think that's a winnable game. This is if this is the year for Clemson. This is the year. Miami, Duke, UNC, UVA, Syracuse. If they run the table with how good, we already talked about how good Pickett's been, plus 4,000. I mean, it's a long shot. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but hey, if we're, you know, we're value hunting here.
What's 10 bucks on 4,000, right?
Yeah. Exactly. That's $400, a $10 bet. Well, what's that little fun? You know, if we're doing that, give me a little Kenny Pickett. Let's take some of these teams that are kind of down the trough. If they go and win out, I got to think he gets at least an invite with the way he's been playing. Mark Whipple's offense, you know, he did that at UMass. Made Adam Brenneman and Andy Isabella NFL draft picks based off of it. I'm going to go with those two guys based on the current board and the value.
Desmond Ridder one, I absolutely love. That was, you stole mine. So that's great. Plus
sorry, Bugsy.
1,600. No, that's, I mean, you got to go with what you're going with. You know, I just don't think Bijan wins because the Longhorns aren't going to playoff and they're not even going to sniff the playoffs. So I don't
I love Kenneth Walker though. Yeah. Why not?
Kenneth Walker's a good, I mean, plus 1,500. I mean, that's,
yeah, that's not bad either.
That's the fourth best odds. It's Corral and Young at plus 210, CJ Stroud at plus 900, and then Walker at plus 1,500. So it's not a shocking development. I kind of like Travion Henderson at plus 3,500 as well for Ohio State if he goes off. But I mean, the rest of these are all pros. You know,
watching Travion Henderson, the explosiveness. Oh my God. He's running it. He's at a different speed. He's like A-Chain, but bigger, you know, and going through the tackles. Oh, my
God. It looks a lot like Zeke, man. It looks a lot like Zeke. He does. So, bold prediction, John, what do you got?
Well, I mentioned Kenneth Walker and Michigan State, and I'm looking at this schedule. I'm trying to feel, is this one of these trap bets? They are on the road against Indiana. Indiana stinks. They are 2-3. They've only scored 119 points. Michigan State has scored 220, and they have my star running back, Kenneth Walker. They're only giving up 4.5. I thought it would be 6.5, 7. Like when I kind of just think in my head, you know, and I'm like, oh, yeah, it should be a touchdown. I have no idea how Indiana could beat Michigan State. They don't have defense. They can't score points, and they're not good. How are they going to beat the Spartans here? Now, I know it's the big, you know, I believe they play Michigan in 2 weeks. So there is this trap game effort. Michigan's, Michigan's the 30th. So they have a bye week in between Michigan State. And I can see that, but I like this bye week in between, but I love Michigan State. So I'm going to put them in. I like Tennessee. They're playing Mississippi. They're a home underdog. They're getting 3 points. Mississippi plays a lot of 2- and 3-point games, my friends. If you can somehow get it to 3.5, my 2-team parlay, Spartans on the road, minus 4.5 against Indiana, Tennessee plus 3 at home versus Mississippi.
All right, Eric, bold prediction. What do you got?
I adore Michigan State. Over Indiana right there too. And I talked about that play on my Bet the Edge appearance this morning over at NBC Sports Edge. So right there with you, Johnny, I cannot freaking believe it's only 4.5 points considering Indiana's starting Jack Tuttle. I'll tell you something. Jack Tuttle sucks.
Yeah, so all right. But he might be better than what Michael Penix has shown
us. It might be better than Michael Penix.
Maybe Vegas says it's an upgrade. I mean,
it might.
It really might be at this point, a limping Michael Penix. That being said, you know, get on to my play. First off, I want to congratulate everybody who followed my advice last week on my 2-team parlay and took UTEP minus 2 over USM. Easy peasy cover right there. No problem. USM, Southern Miss cannot move the ball at all. At all. Starting their third-string quarterback. Excellent. And UTSA plus. They were getting points against Western Kentucky with the outright win. Big two-teamer victory. Congratulations to everybody who played that last week. That being said, moving on. The aforementioned San Diego State Aztecs minus 8 over San Jose State. San Jose State, we've seen really struggle. This is not the 2020 San Jose State Spartans. Nick Starkel has been hurt. Doughty's going to play this week. Nick Nash, dual threat quarterback, was absolutely helpless last week. They couldn't get anything going. That offense is listless. They don't have an identity. They can't run the ball as well as they want to. Because, I mean, this is an air raid team. And they're only good in terms of like their plays per game, very low. I want to say like they're in the 120 range in terms of like overall, you know, team ranking nationally in terms of plays per game. They're getting under 60 snaps a game. That's absolutely ridiculous for an air raid team. On the other side, you get San Diego State, who is the fifth overall rated defense in the country, and they've just been smothering passing attacks. Like, you're not going to run on them. I mean, good luck. But just about everything they do is well is going to be a problem for San Jose State, because San Jose State, what they do well is they're pretty good in terms of efficiency, you know, and limiting success rate. But they give up big plays, and that's what San Diego State does extremely well on the ground, you know, behind Greg Bell, is they rip off pretty big plays. So I really like San Diego State over San Jose State. I just don't see how the Spartans move the ball at all. I don't think they can. I just don't think they can do it. And then next, Florida, -9.5 over LSU. We talked about LSU, the problems. Ed Orgeron on the hot seat year and a half after winning one of the most magical national title runs that I've seen. I mean, that was as close to perfection as you're going to get with Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Oh, defense was loaded. I mean, everything about that run was just magical. But they're gone, as John mentioned. Joe Brady, gone. Burrow, gone. Chase, gone. Terrace Marshall, gone. Justin Jefferson, gone.
I forgot Justin Jefferson.
Seriously. Everything that made that team special, there's nothing about it. And Ed Orgeron has always been, you know, also out of the Herm Edwards model, where he's the CEO type of a coach and delegates. Well, guess what? Who are you delegating to now?
There's no Joe Brady to tell.
Delegate to the unemployment office pretty soon.
That's weird. Exactly. Plus, you got to remember, Orgeron, after he won the 2019 title, he went big time and divorced his longtime wife. Right, because now he's a big deal. Now he's a big guy. Well,
I mean,
those flaws are tough.
Read some of the stuff that was going on at LSU under him. There's no way he lasts after this year. I think so.
He cannot last. I don't think so. And keep in mind, they upset Florida last year when Florida was rolling.
Yeah,
they haven't forgotten bulletin board material. They've been waiting to get their hands on LSU for a full year. They're coming for LSU. I guarantee this is happening. It's -9.5. Like, it started at -10.5. Actually went down after we found out that Boutte is like legitimately out. I don't understand how they move the ball. I don't know what they're throwing to. I watched Deion Smith against Auburn. Okay. He dropped a touchdown pass. It was right in his hands. It was well thrown by Max Johnson right at the front pylon, and it cost him. They threw one touchdown to Booty to open up the first half, and then all they did was kick field goals the entire rest of the game, and that followed suit against Kentucky last week. They were down 35-7 before they put up two garbage time touchdowns late. I mean, this is a team that has real serious problems, and the best thing about them is gone. Bad news for LSU. You got an angry Florida, and you're limping into this game. SDSU, Florida, two-team parlay, cash it.
All right, look, I was 0 for 3 last week. So if you want to fade me and not play me, do it. I'm just going to give you a three-team parlay of all underdogs, because that is going to pay off more. So
huge.
No guarantee that it's going to work, but it's bold predictions. It's not predictions. So if you want my predictions, go to my Betting Pros article. I was 7-3 last week, 5-5 last week, 7-3 the week before. So doing pretty good over there. Let's go Navy +10.5 at Memphis. I think that's too many points for Navy. They showed some good defense last week. I will take them plus the points. Mizzou +9 against Texas A&M. They shouldn't be in this game at all, but this is the ultimate letdown spot. After you get all that energy, you go and you beat Bama and you have a storm the field and all that stuff. This is the ultimate letdown. I don't think they will lose this game, but I think they will look how they've looked in previous games. They're not going to get up for this one against a miserable Missouri team. So I'll take them plus the points. Then Kent State +6.5 versus Western Michigan. I think they can win that one straight up if they play it right. So that is going to be my three-team parlay. All pluses on Navy +10.5 at Memphis, Missouri +9 at Texas A&M, and Kent State +6.5 at home against Western Michigan. that is the show for today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And John, at GridironSkull91, what do you have coming up this week, man?
All right, go to Fantrax.com. My waiver wire gemstones came out this morning. Check it out. If you need any help putting together your missing players on buy, you need some pickups, it's all there, waiver wire. And some of the players we talked about might not be picked up overnight. So make sure you get those lineups in. 27 teams on buy. But check out my stuff on Fantrax.
Eric, what do you got at CF Froton on the Twitter? Where can they find all of your great stuff?
My waiver wire article just posted this afternoon, so that is out there and ready for consumption. I actually dig pretty deep into a few of these situations and really get a little bit wonky into the stats. So I put some time into this one. I think it's a pretty good article. Always a DFS article. Obviously, the player props. I went 6-1 last week on my player props article. Absolutely crushed it. It was a great slate. Loved some of those lines. Very successful week. And also on Fridays now, I am doing a segment with the NBC Sports Edge, where I will be going through my three favorite plays. A lot of them are kind of down the board in terms of the – I like to kind of go with the G5 stuff after I get a chance to really dig into it and get into those, because there's the road less traveled I kind of like to go in. John and I like our stats. We like to get a little wonky. So I'll be doing that as well. Went 2-1 on those plays last week. John and I were both on BYU. It cost us.
Oh yeah.
Ouch. And then obviously on Saturday morning, myself and the purveyor of the CFF site, none other than Michael Bainbridge, my roommate in Canton, for the Kings Classic Fantasy Football Draft. We do our Saturday morning show where we run through DFS, player props, and our favorite sides.
John, you had something else you wanted to say.
Just one. You should read Eric's player props. If he tells you a player is going to go over and he's on a waiver wire, think about picking him up, folks. And if he tells you a player's on the under and he's in your lineup, you better bench his butt. Because Eric's going to, when Eric says the guy's going under, he better get out of your lineup. I read it every week. I know it's for player props, but it will help you for starting lineup decisions.
Excellent, excellent. For me, you can watch my or listen to my Betting Pro show with Joe Pizzapia. So please check that out if you would over at Betting Pros NFL. And also, I do Line Star DFS for and betting picks for the NFL every single week, three times a week, with my guy Casey Bubba. In This League Fantasy Football with the Welsh. In This League Fantasy Baseball with the Welsh. We do Sports Grid. So I've got IDP with Gary, IDP with Joe on Fantasy Pros as well. So please just check out all the stuff and things you can for my stuff. You can find that all at Bogman Sports as well. So good luck, everyone, and we will see you guys next week. Take it easy.